will be like God, knowing both good and evil. Now, verse 6 is the linchpin. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was delicious or desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. The sin that happens here in Genesis, the third chapter, that Eve, whenever she looks at the fruit, is the exact same mentality that eight chapters later, that the people at the Tower of Babel would then commit also themselves. What they're doing in Genesis, the 11th chapter, is we're not happy with our life the way it is now, and so what we're going to do is going to build this massive structure up into the heaven to make a name for ourselves. And surely whenever Eve, in Genesis, the third chapter, walked by the tree which she knew good and well that she was not to have any part of, and which verse 6 says she admired because she knew that it was desirable to make one wise. She wanted to eat of that. And the conversation that she has with Satan, especially there in the first couple of verses of Genesis, the third chapter, whenever the serpent slithers up towards Eve and says, "Why don't you go ahead and eat some of that?" And the woman says, "Well, we would, but we can't." And she obviously does the right thing in that instance. "I can't do it because of X, Y, and Z." Notice what the serpent says back to her. Your translation may say something along the lines of, "Did God really say?" In other words, I know that's what you say God said, but did God really say that? And the reason, in the serpent's mindset, the reason he said that is because he knows that the day you eat of it, you're going to be like him. And so in reality, what God is trying to do, the serpent is convincing Eve of, what the serpent is trying to do is to get you to stay down here so that he can maintain his level of complete supremacy. You stay down here, he stays up there, and if you eat that, that's the bridge that we'll connect the two. That's the exact same sin that these people tried to commit. And what you see Eve doing is looking at her wife, and she was in a state of complete bliss, a state of complete paradise. She wanted for absolutely nothing. But that wasn't enough for her, because she looked at the tree, and being discontent with her life as it was, she took from the tree and she ate. And several of many more centuries, years later, David, whenever he walks up on the top of his roof as his army is out to battle, and he sees Bathsheba all the way on the other side of the street, however far away she is, and he sees that she's beautiful, and he takes her for himself, and then kills Uriah the Hittite to make her his wife, commits the exact same thing. If you look in 2 Samuel 7 or 12th chapter, verses 7 through 8, what it reveals to us is that when Nathan the prophet showed up at David's doorstep and said the immortal phrase that "you are the man," he then made the statement right after that of God communicating to David that if all these things that I had given you, the power, the wealth, the women, the wives of your enemies, if all of these things had not been enough, I would have given you so much more. And yet you took something that wasn't yours, and you took it for yourself. The reason David did that is the same reason these people did that. It's because they were discontent with their life. They believed God was holding out on them. And so they had tried to attain for something that wasn't their own. The notion of this discontentment, the idea of discontentment, is something that in our lives runs rampant. You can't turn on your TV, you can't turn on your radio, you can't open up your Facebook page without seeing a greatest hits version of everybody else's life. And whenever you look at everybody else's life, you instinctively think to yourself, "I want that, I want that, I want this. I know I'm not supposed to have that, but I will have that." It's the same reason people eat junk food, knowing it's not good for them. Because they're not happy with whatever it is at this point in their life. They know it's not going to be good for them, so they take it. By the way, I'm not downing junk food. As you can see, I've had my share of fare from time to time. But it's, "I want this for my life. I know it's not good for me, but I want to take it anyways." And we get jealous. We get discontent. We get unhappy with the way our life is. We seek to change it in some way. This notion of discontentment is something that seeps through every single bit of our lives, seeps through every single bit of our consumerism, and seeps to the very core of what it means to be an American. The idea that there's always something better, always something grander out there. There's nothing wrong with a lot of those things. Nothing wrong with junk food, at least in moderation. Nothing wrong with being on Facebook in moderation. Studies have shown that it can lead to depression. There's nothing wrong with watching TV in moderation. Nothing wrong with those things. But when we begin to look at these things and think to ourselves, "God hasn't given me this," or "my life isn't near as good as everybody else's," that discontentment breeds dissatisfaction, which gives birth to sin. I want you to open up in Philippians, the fourth chapter. This is where we're going to spend most of our time here this morning. Philippians chapter 4, Paul gives the solution for something like this. And if you can accuse Paul of anything, you can't accuse him of being discontent. Paul was one of those stories that you read about in Scripture, and I think the Scriptures highlight for a very specific reason. Because Paul went through just about every discomfort, every unhappiness that you can imagine in your own personal life. And yet still, Paul, when all was said and done, still found the solution for contentment. And it wasn't wrapped up in the fact that he had millions of dollars or millions of denarii back then. It wasn't wrapped up in the fact that he had oodles of friends. It was the fact that he had learned the secret of that in the first place. In Philippians, the fourth chapter, look at what he says here in verse 8. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, this fantastic epistle that hardly has anything negative in it. Philippians chapter 4, starting in verse 8, listen to what he says to the church at Philippi. He says, "Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lowly, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and there is anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things." That's not just good advice. That ties in immediately to what he's going to be talking about, which finds its culmination in verse 11. Find your hesitation or find your focus on these types of things, those things that are pure, those things that are holy, those things that are lovely. Focus on those things. Verse 9, "The things that you have learned and have received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you." Think about the fact that he could have chosen any descriptive adjective of God in that section to use except for God of peace. He chose God of peace for a very specific reason. Look at verse 10. "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly." Now he's talking about his personal relationship between these people. "I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at least you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity." Talking about the fact that these people contributed things to his needs on a monetary financial basis. Verse 11, this is the cream of the crop here in verse 11. "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am." He talks about the God of peace. He talks about meditating on these things. He talks about focusing on those things that are lovely, those things that will give you comfort. And then he describes how these people had wanted to donate or had wanted to contribute financially to his cause, but they didn't have the opportunity before. Now they do, and he's happy for that. But he mentions in verse 11 the fact that no matter